I am fantasy author L. Penelope, and welcome to My Imaginary Friends, a look behind the scenes at an author mapping the worlds in my head and making them a reality. Hello, friends. Today is Friday, April 5th, 2019, and this is episode 8 of My Imaginary Friends. I'm Leslie. Today is kind of a gray, cloudy day. The roosters are in rare form next door, crowing. I'm just hearing them more this morning for some reason. But yeah, it's been a good week. Pretty productive. I'm pretty happy about that. This week's best thing is I finished my past pages for Whispers of Shadow and Flame. So those are the final proof pages. The arcs were printed before that, but this is the last time I get to see it before it goes to the printer. And so they are due Monday. Last night I finished them. And so now the next step is for me to, so what happens is I printed it out and so I could read it on paper and I made all my corrections by hand and I put little flags on the pages that have corrections so that I can gather them up now, scan them and send them into my editor's assistant. And so that'll happen probably tomorrow. I'll do that. I'm not sure if I feel like doing it today. Today I do. There were a couple of pages that I wasn't reading near a computer or near a thesaurus or anything. So, and most of the things that I flagged, probably 75%, are just word repetition and where I repeated the same word either in the same sentence or the same paragraph. So there were a couple of times when I was just tired. I wanted to get through it. I didn't want to think of a new word at the moment. So I do need to go back and just replace a couple of words and then gather those pages and send them away. And that'll be done. And so I didn't really read anything this week. I started one book, which I might talk about next week because it's pretty good, but I won't talk about it yet in case it disappoints me. but I was like, I can't read any more books until I finish reading this book. And it was 475 pages, the past pages. And I have to read very carefully because I'm trying to read not just for the story. I'm reading to proof it and to do this final check on logic and make sure I haven't made any mistakes that nobody else caught in terms of the magic or the logic or people being where they are not supposed to be or sitting when they were standing, you know, a second ago. So all that stuff that hopefully would have been caught, but, you know, it's up to me to make sure. And also just refreshing myself on the story as I'm working on the next installment. There are a couple things that I forgot, you know, and it hasn't made a big impact, but one of them was something that I kind of hint at the very, very end of the book. I think it's in one of the epilogues or right before the epilogue. And I couldn't remember whether I had, because when I was writing Whispers, I was kind of going back and forth between revealing that thing or hinting at it. And so in book three, I'm like, okay, what did I do? And so I finally got to that part last night. I was like, okay, I remember now. So yeah, that just refreshing yourself on what's happening. And now it's done. Other writing news, I am almost done with the bulk of the revision for Cry of Metal and Bone. And so the scenes that I had outlined for this new storyline, I got to basically the last one. There's an epilogue to that storyline that I need to write, but it connects with the other storyline. So what I think I'm going to do now is finish reviewing the other scenes that didn't need as much work, just to make sure that they're okay. There are some other changes I know that a couple of scenes need, but they weren't as big as what I've been struggling with the past few weeks. And then next week, do a polish on it, send the whole thing to my editor. Send the whole thing to my agent for another set of eyes. And then the week after that, get started on the epigraphs. So each book has, in each chapter of each book has epigraphs. And I'm not ready to think about them yet. I'll probably talk about them more next week and the whole process of creating them. But they're, you know, it's going to take me a good 2 weeks to write the epigraphs for each chapter. And they have to be, I have to do it last because my chapters are constantly changing. I'm always in awe of authors who know what their chapters are up front, who like outline in chapter form. I outline in scenes and POVs. And with a book like this that has six, seven POVs, I maybe not that many. I can't remember. Five or six. But it could be seven because there's a couple that only have a few POVs. And each POV is not going to be its own chapter. I'd have 100 chapters. So the work of combining and figuring out where the chapter breaks are going to be has always mystified me. The original, the self-published version of Song of Blood and Stone, I think had 11 chapters. And then, because what happened was, it had more. And then I think my copy editor was like, oh, these chapters are too short or something. Somebody, or maybe it was a beta reader. Somebody said something about the chapters. And at the last minute, I combined all these chapters. And then, of course, someone said, the chapters are so long. So the St. Martin's version has something like 52 chapters, the hardcover. And then the expanded edition, I can't remember how many chapters there are, but I was just going back and forth about where they should break, how long they should be. Should I try for length? But then I really want, you want to end each chapter so that you have to turn the page, you know? There's just so much to think about. And it's not natural to me. It's like, well, the chapter could be here, it could be here. And so I have to make those decisions. And since each chapter has an epigraph, and I need to know how many epigraphs I have to write, because they are, in the first book, in each book, they're going to be from a fictional book in the universe. So in Song of Blood and Stone, they're from collected folk tales, this book of folk tales, and their each individual folk tale starts, and they're very short, you know, starts a chapter. In book two, what are they? Oh, yes. I just finished reading this book. In Whispers, they are from a book that one of the main characters finds in the story. And so she's reading it throughout and they're pieces of that. And they actually tell a story. And they were really fun and really hard to write. And I'll probably talk about more about them later. But haven't quite figured out what the epigraphs are going to be for Cry of Metal and Bone. I have an idea. I'm not sure if it's a good idea yet. And so over the next week, as I finalize the chapters and where they end, then I'll know the number, and then I'll really be able to put all of my brain power into coming up with 50 to 60, it looks like, epigraphs for each chapter. And that'll be fun. I keep reminding myself, it'll be fine. Because I'm giving myself 2 weeks, so depending on how many I have to write, it can be a little harrowing. So as I've been revising, I've been trying to really nail down my revision process, and because it's always a moving target, it's always changing, and it changes sometimes within the book, but I have a core process that seems to be working, and I've got these index cards that I started using. I've gone back and forth between using index cards when I write. I usually, at some point in the process, use them for something. And so lately, for this particular revision, it's been, okay, I've got an idea, I've got a thing that needs to happen, and I don't want to forget it. And I could put it in my notebook, I could put it in Scrivener, I could put it in a text file, I do those things. I have notes in these different places. Like, Scrivener keeps most of them. But when I'm brainstorming, I like to write just in a plain text file. I use BB Edit on the Mac. And I don't want any formatting. I don't want fonts, sizes. I want text and maybe some dashes for bullet points, but that's it. And I can just type and just type my thoughts. I type faster than I write by hand. And so that's what a lot of times I just have these text files that I create. And then eventually I will, and it's just brainstorming. It's just brain dumping every idea that could possibly be, I put in these text files. But it's not a good way to be able to go back and access that information. They're really long. I just keep adding to them. And so I'll put stuff in my notebook, but then I have to flip through the pages. And so I started writing things on index cards. And then I would write what should happen in these scenes on index cards. And then I would have another index card for things that don't need a whole scene, but I can stick into another scene somewhere because I want the information to come out, but it's not enough to require its own scene. And then I started doing character cards sometimes when I want to remember certain things about the character. And all of the character information is in my Scrivener file in the character folder. But I want a shorthand because I can go back and forth. But if I spread a few index cards on my desk in front of me as I'm writing, it's just easier to see. So I have started using character cards, which have the character name, a few traits, and then like the character verb, and their goals and desires. So the verb, Damon Swade, who is an author who is fantastic speaker. I saw him at RWA, and then he came to the DC chapter of RWA to do a 2-day workshop, and it was amazing. And he's just super charismatic. If you ever get the chance to see him speak, it's like a thing that you actually have to experience. And so he was the first person to introduce me to the concept of characters having a verb. And so I really loved it. And I don't use it all the time, but there's certain times when I need to go back in and figure out, okay, what are they? Like, who are they? And going back to their goal and their driving force and their motivation, but going back to their verb. And so, like, for example, I believe he says Pride and Prejudice, Lizzie Bennet, her verb is to provoke. And the verb is just, they always do this thing or some aspect of this thing. So she is always provoking. And I believe Darcy's is to protect or preserve, something like that. And so you look at their actions throughout the book. And no matter what she's doing, it comes back to that verb or a synonym of that verb. And so you can break your characters down into verbs. And then you always know what they're going to do. And it's a really interesting way of thinking about characters. And so I had that information for these characters somewhere. I was like, did I choose a verb for her? Was I doing that? And I hadn't. And I was really struggling for this one character, Ella, to find a verb for her at this point, very late in writing and revising. Like, oh, what is she always doing? And so part of it was protecting and part of it was yearning. And I'd have to look and see what I ended up with. But I can customize this to my needs. So I can use multiple verbs, but having that in front of me, and I also write down gestures like, okay, when Jack is frustrated, when Darwin is frustrated, he rubs the back of his neck, and Ben like pinches the bridge of his nose. So each character has certain things that they do when they're feeling certain emotions. Ella cracks her knuckles when she is nervous or worrying about something, and having those spread out in front of me while I'm writing is super helpful. And the other thing I started doing with index cards, and these are all different colors. So the character cards will be one color, scene cards will be another color, and I've got white cards for kind of reference. And I've been using a version of The Story Grid by Sean Coyne, which is a great book if you're editing and revising. And it breaks down the scenes. So when I'm looking at a scene, I'm trying to break it down into its component parts, which are the desire, the inciting incident, the progressive complications, the turning point, the crisis, the climax, and the resolution. And so usually if I can't figure out all of those things, then the scene is probably not working. And sometimes a scene doesn't need to work. Like every single scene doesn't need to work, but I think 90% of them need to work in this way. And this is what Sean Coyne says, work, quote unquote, work. So as I'm going back through the fast draft and to the revision, the fast draft is not going to have all of these things. The fast draft is just a dump of what I think needs to happen. And then the revision is where I figure out all of this. I get the mechanics, I get the choreography, all of the emotion and the deep POV and all of that stuff. And so I have kind of the definition of each of these points on these cards so that I can remember, okay, what happens in the crisis? What is that supposed to mean? And what happens at the turning point? How do you make your scenes turn? Story Grid is a great book for that. And I behind me on my shelf, I have my writing books. And so a lot of times I'm turning and I'm like, okay, what did he say about this? And then like 2 days ago, I had to pull out Story Grid. I pulled out Writing from the Middle by James Scott Bell and Creating Character Arcs by K.M. Wyland. And I was kind of juggling between these three books to figure out what needed to happen and how to make sure that the scene was structured properly and unfolding properly, in addition to all of the story stuff that has to happen in it. I need to test it. And it's kind of like QA testing. So when I
My first job in high school was for a software company. And then my job in graduate school was also for a software company. And I did support. I was tech support. But I also did some QA testing. And it's quality assurance testing on software. It's just basically beating it to make sure it doesn't break or to see what the faults are. And I find myself kind of QA testing my scenes when I revise, which is, you know, in this, which is, okay, what's the character want? What is the desire? Which is the first step of, I'm not even sure desire is in StoryGrid. I think I did a sort of Frankenstein cobbling together of things from StoryGrid and things from other places. But goal, motivation, conflict, which is something, learning about that changed my life in terms of writing. And the goal is the desire of the scene. Like a character has to have a strong goal. They have to want something. And then, so testing the goal, testing why they want it, making sure that, it leads logically from one scene to another. And all the other, these other aspects. So that's my QA testing for the scene. And if I can't feel good about that, then I usually need to still be working on it. And I can't quite continue until that's done. Once that's done and I've written it, the next draft, which is the thing I'm doing next week, will be the polish, which trying to reduce the repeated words, making sure the sentences are clear and are, well, you know, sound good and they have rhythm and musicality to them, making sure they make sense. So that's kind of that's what I call a polish. But this revision is really digging deep and analyzing the scene. And then as I'm doing that, analyzing the story to make sure they fit together well. And like I've said before, that's been difficult with this particular book and this storyline. Coming to the end of it, still a little bit worried, but I was reminded today in my mastermind, I have an author mastermind with two other authors, and it's been going on for years. So they've seen me deal with this before. And my friend was like, yeah, this is, you know, you always think this. And I had just finished telling them how I was really enjoying reading my past pages, reading the book again. I've had a couple months away from it. And that the new storyline worked for me. I really liked it. And so she was like, yeah, you know, the thing you're going through now, you were worried about the storyline in Whispers and you just finished reading it and you really liked it. So I'm very grateful for that reminder that it's probably okay. Like if I think it's okay when I'm done with it, it probably is okay. So I'm going to have to rely on that being the truth. My deadline, I was hoping to be done today. The first deadline was April 1st, which passed. So this weekend, by Monday, I feel really confident that the bulk of the revision will be done and just I'll be ready for that polish. And I realized that I've gone through the five stages of grief in terms of accepting that I have not met my self-imposed deadlines. So there was the denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and I'm at acceptance right now. Like, it is what it is. I think I cycle through them like daily almost, or every couple of days. Like I'll accept it and then I'll start denying it again. And I wonder if that's part of it. Like you have these cycles of stages of grief about not meeting your deadlines. And the reason why the deadline is important is because I need those 2 weeks to write the epigraphs and I need the polishing time and all of that. And I just need space, you know, even a couple of days away from it. And then to be able to print it out, read it over again. Hopefully I'll have time to have the computer read it to me. That's another stage of the final polish. Once I've done the polish, actually, then I print it out, go through it again on paper, have a different medium, a different font that can sometimes create distance when you don't have time away from it, just create a different way of looking at it. And having it read back to me by the computer also helps. And some authors will read it out loud. My voice does not last that long. So, and it's very uncomfortable to read 130,000 words out loud. I don't know how I could do that. So, many props to audiobook narrators and people who narrate their own books, you know, like I my throat hurts just thinking about that. So those are the steps that I'm going to be going through as I complete this and get ready to turn it in May 1st. I feel good about that though. Like I've gone through all these struggles about will this book be ready and will it be okay? And now I guess I'm at acceptance. It'll be what it'll be. And I think it'll be good because I do feel lighter about it. I'm looking forward to this process and to moving on to the next thing. And the book's coming out eventually, whenever that is. I will be working on book four by the time book two comes out. I was doing my preliminary schedule for book four, and October 1st, Whispers comes out. By October 1st, I need to be basically done with a clean draft of book four and have people starting to read it, because it is due at the beginning or February of 2020, and that's a little bit scary because I like, you know, having the feedback is good. The prevailing wisdom in the indie author community is if you're a brand new author, write three books before you release one so that you can do a rapid release and so you can build momentum and engage the Amazon algorithm to start recommending your book for you. And yes, all of that is true. But if I was starting out today, I would not do that because I really valued being able to get the feedback on book one before book two came out while I was working on book two. And everything from, and this is when I was still reading reviews, but ideas of what people expected to see in the relationship were interesting to me because it was completely different from where I was going. But I was like, it sparked something. And I didn't necessarily do that, but it did spark ideas. And criticism, constructive criticism, whenever that's available, was good. And just seeing the response, seeing how people reacted to it, I think did something. So I find it difficult to advise a brand new author to write three whole books that they don't know how anyone's going to feel about them before they release one. And even moving forward, like I think once you've got some books under your belt, then maybe that's good. And you have a lot more confidence in yourself. But that would be tough. And even now, you know, thinking about, oh gosh, what are they going to think about book two? And book four will be well on its way to being complete. But, you know, at a certain point, you have to just write what's in your heart to write. You know, you can't take, there's, you know, feedback only goes so far, but it's on my mind. Like it's something I've been thinking about a lot. And really, as I'm gearing up, what is going to be a satisfying ending? Like I know the ending. And I will tell you right now, I'm a firm believer in happily ever after. So the ending of the series is not going to destroy your heart. But will it be satisfying? You know, that's one of the, you know, the insecurities and fears already start creeping in right now. And also, there's a whole piracy discussion happening. And an author, I believe Rachel Kane, posted about her sales figures and how much piracy she had. Like she's a YA fantasy author. I think she sold something like 50,000 of the first book, but it was pirated on one site 101,000 times. And by the fourth book, it only sold 7,000 copies and the piracy was high. And so it's natural for, you know, the books in the series to have diminishing sales because I think, at least in the indie world, and I'm not sure if this is true in trad, but if you have a 50% read through from one to two, that's pretty normal. And then from there, if 50% of the people who read book one read book two, 80 to 90% of the people who read book two will read book three and subsequent books. So you'll keep it at 80 to 90%, but that first book is going to have a big drop off. So as I'm, you know, thinking about book four, and these are not things I think I should be thinking about, but they're there in my head. Like, okay, no matter how many people read book one, by the number of people who make it all the way to book four are going to be considerably fewer. And I'm going to pour my heart and soul into book four because, you know, I have to in order to write it and be happy with it. And I should not be thinking about, oh, there's only a few people that are going to read it. Or, I mean, 50,000 to 7,000 is partially just due to the churn of a series. And then I can't think about piracy. Like that can't enter into my brain. Or else, I don't know. There's so many other difficulties and factors in being an author in this writing world and thinking about things like sales and how many people will read it. And that was probably in a period of time, like over the course of the life of the book, I'm sure there'll be more. And so yeah, how do I make myself not think about things I shouldn't think about when I'm thinking about them? Question for the ages. So that's it for me this week. I need to get back to work, but I hope you have a wonderful week and I will talk to you soon. Happy reading. For episode show notes and to learn more about me and my books, go to lpenelope.com. Subscribe to My Imaginary Friends wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video episodes on YouTube. Please leave a rating and review to help support the show.